It's really simple. Sow some uncontaminated seeds in organic soil, add clean water, fresh air, sunshine, then enjoy eating the maximum nutrition of microgreens. This leads us to ask, if it really is this simple, why doesn't everybody eat microgreens?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1345th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Punta Arenas who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, it seems as though we are running out of food. Oh, that is not to say that we are running out of things to eat. No, on the contrary. There are many things to eat, and they are cheap, too. And yet, so many of those things we are being offered in brightly colored packages for so little money have very little food in them. In fact, one of the ways they make food cheap is to take the food out of it and put it in fancy packages. And so we eat the cheap food because it's cheap and easy to get. And yet, when we do, our bodies cry out for more nutrition. So we eat more cheap food, and yet our bodies still cry out for even more nutrition. So we eat more cheap food, and soon our bodies rebel and store up fat and break down. Then one day we wake up to the fact that cheap food really isn't cheap at all. Then what? Well, one thing we could do is turn to the essential simplicity of the maximum nutrition we can get by eating microgreens. How simple? Sow some uncontaminated seeds in organic soil. Add clean water, fresh air, and some sunshine. Then harvest the sprouted seeds and enjoy eating the maximum nutrition of microgreens. The simple solution to the problem of cheap food leads us to ask, why doesn't everybody eat microgreens? Well, here to help us find some answers, we have Ken Kimes and Sandra Ward, who are the new natives of new natives, microgreens. Ken and Sandra, welcome. Ken, let's start with you. What the heck? It's been a long time since we worked together, I think way back in food chain number 942, which makes it about 8 years ago, which a story we'll pick up later when we start talking about your farm and whatnot. But it's good to have you back. And Sandra, I'll ask you, what is New Natives? Yeah. Where'd you get that name?
Oh, well, okay, so we were thinking about it. What we were doing was sprouting, and that is nothing new. It's been was going on for a few thousand years, but to this community, to this population, to this culture, fairly new. And so what we were doing is starting with wheat, very, very old, and then presenting it in a brand new way for this culture. So there you take the native, the wheat, and then you do something innovative or something not new to the culture, the other cultures, but to ours. So that's New Natives. That's what it was all about.
Something new with something very, very, very old. Explain the old, Ken. The tradition of sprouting seeds has been around forever, as long as there's been seeds. Probably somebody found some seeds on the ground and they were sprouting, and they thought, what would happen if I eat them?
Sure, Michael. And imagining that somewhere back there, they had some seeds in storage, and the water got in, seeds started to sprout, and there's a lot of nutritional value there. The folks were thinking about that, but they saw something that they could eat, and they turned out to be good for them. They could make some food value out.
Okay, would you shift around in your location there, Ken, and see if you can find some more bars for us on your cell phone, because it's breaking up a little bit there. So if you just kind of shift around, you can probably find a better place there. So a lot of nutrition in the seeds. And new natives, how long have you been in business, Sandra?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I was counting it up. So 42 years.
42 years.
Every day we've been sprouting, we've been planting, and 5 or 6 days of the week we've been harvesting for 42 years.
So you've been doing a long time. And Ken, Sandra remarked that when you started doing this, it was relatively new. Well, I remember that, relatively new, because I was there observing and wondering what the heck is going on with sprouting seeds. Though I had been on a farm, and as a matter of fact, I had once had the job of cleaning out a grain silo in which there was a lot of barley that had been fermenting, and so the seeds were sprouting. It was one heck of a job. So when I saw somebody actually sprouting seeds, I thought, now this is interesting. So it was relatively new then, was it not?
Well, no, it's thousands of years old. And also, Michael, you know, you can still get beer and alcoholic drinks out of sprouted seeds. It goes into fermentation. So there's just a whole lot of use for sprouted seeds. But the important piece to that puzzle is that the nutrition of the sprouted seeds increases dramatically as they germinate. So all kinds of different vitamins, all kinds of different nutrients become accessible. Enzymes kick in. The simple sugars are converted to, you know, proteins. And so the seed is getting ready to feed that sprout as it grows. And in doing that, it's creating a whole lot of nutrition that humans and animals take advantage of. There's lots of information that sprouted seeds increase the fertility in such as chickens and goats and things like that. So sprouted seeds are a really valuable piece. I think ancient time people would observe closely and they would notice that sprouted seeds were good for their animals and themselves.
Good for the animals, good for themselves. If you think about it, all of the energy and the volition stored in a seed to give that plant that emerges from the seed a boost in life is what you're talking about. And when that seed comes to life, the nutrition comes to life as well. So in essence, instead of eating something that's stored, you're eating something that's alive and coming to life.
That's right. And being converted to things that you can use, you know, nutrients that you can actually use.
So there's a lot of value in eating sprouts.
Oh, my goodness.
So why doesn't everybody eat sprouts? That is the question I'm going to put on the table today and see if we can figure out an answer. Because when you look at it, and from my experience eating your sprouts, you know, I scratch my head now and think, these sprouts make everything come to life. I can put sprouts on a peanut butter sandwich and turn it into a whole new thing. It's a food that's full of life. So that is the question we're going to be working with today, is why doesn't everybody eat the sprouts? So let's go back to new natives. You've been doing this for 40-some years, long time. How do you go about getting your sprouts out to the folks like me?
Okay, so can I just start in on this? So what we did is we started with the farmers markets. And that was so we could have a one-to-one kind of educational prompting to let these people know what's going on now. Having said that, we started in 84, I think, at the farmers markets. Today, even Sunday at Live Oak Farmers Markets, We have people that come up that, you know, and it was Father's Day, so yeah, there was tourists and people that don't live here, but they come up to our table and they're just, they don't know what they're looking at. They go, "What is this? What are you doing?" So even today, it's in some way, I try not to let it discourage me, but people don't know about sprouts or microgreens, as we call them now. It's just not highly marketed. In fact, it's in over time since it's usually put down. There was a big alfalfa scare back in the 1990s, I think, and that was, you know, it's still today, even though I think it was completely farce, still today doctors tell pregnant women not to eat sprouts, you know. And so it just is, it's like it's been banged up quite a bit, and I think one of the reasons is it's cheap. You can do this at home. You can have a year's supply of really daily supply of the most nutritious food you're going to find, and you're the one that's producing it. So it's economically, you know, it doesn't, it's kind of like a dead end for capitalism. It doesn't work that way. So I think this is one reason why people don't know about sprouts. So what would you say about that, Kenny?
So essentially,
go ahead, Michael.
So essentially, I think what Sandra was saying is that there's no way to corner the market. So if you can't corner the market, or if you can't control the market, then why bother trying? And why bother selling people on having essential nutrition when you're selling pharmaceuticals to them?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you can't really patent sprouts. And you can't patent the nutrition in sprouts. There was a fellow that tried back in the 80s to patent the nutrition in broccoli sprouts. And the patent went through, but it was challenged and it was eventually turned down, because you actually have to create something new in order to patent it. You can't just find what's there and patent that. But he did find that broccoli sprouts are incredible tumor fighters and really good for fighting cancer and other kinds of diseases. And that's just broccoli. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of sprouts there with a whole lot of different kinds of nutrition profiles. Also, food is marketed by brand, and they spend a lot of money branding things and selling them to you. And when was the last time you bought a brand of carrots or a brand of celery? You don't. You go and you buy carrots. Unless you're shopping at the farmer's market and you buy it from a specific farm. So branding is a thing, owning a brand and food and capitalism, it all kind of comes together in a really crappy food system, producing junky food, making people fat and unhealthy.
Well, and so that leads us back to the question of the day. Why isn't everybody eating sprouts? Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio program with Michael Olson, writing Herd on the subject today. And with us, we have Ken Kimes and Sandra Ward, who have been growing sprouts, or microgreens, as they are now known, for some 40 years, and selling them at the markets, the farmers markets and the grocery stores of the Central California metropolitan Bay Area region, as a matter of fact, under the New Natives brand. So there is a brand to watch out for if you're in the San Francisco Bay region. And we will be right back. Stay tuned.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are talking essential nutrition and the essential simplicity of how to get essential nutrition. And we're talking about plants that have been freshly sprouted from their seeds. And all of the energy and the food and the nutrition in those seeds is in the process of being converted into life. And you snatch that life right there, and you have some of the best food for the body that you can find anywhere. And it's so essentially easy. Why don't we all eat them? That is the question we have on the table today. with two people who have been convincing people of that same elemental fact for 45 years at the farmers markets and grocery stores of Central California, new natives, Ken Kime and Sandra Ward. So let's start with the very basic things. What the heck is a sprout? You take a seed, and what do you do with it, Ken?
Well, basically, you soak it, and people soak them various times, you know, anything from four hours to 8 hours. Then you drain that water off, then you rinse it a couple times, and keep rinsing it for about 3 or 4 days. You let it sprout till the sprout length is what it should be, depending on the sprout. And then you put it in the fridge, and you eat it. Eat it, put it in the fridge, and eat it. And there you go. Put it on all kinds of foods, salads, sandwiches, and so forth. What you don't do with it, generally speaking, is you don't cook it. You eat it raw and fresh.
Well, sometimes I put it on soup.
Oh, yeah.
Right on top of the soup, you know. And it works that way as well. So though you don't cook it, you can eat it with cooked food very easily. So it's just the easiest thing in the world to eat. Once you've got them sprouted, just put it on whatever you're eating, and there you are. What kind of seeds should we sprout? Sandra?
Well, you want to sprout certified organic seeds. And I tell you why. I'll give you an example. Let's talk sunflower seeds. The ones that come in the package that we take to the ball games and we just munch on.
Right.
Okay. So UK has outlawed paraquat. Paraquat is Agent Orange that they use in Vietnam. It's a defoliant. Right?
Right.
So they manufacture it in the UK. They outlaw, but the U.S. is one of a large buyer of paraquat. And so I know for a fact that they spray it on sunflower to defoliate it so that they can collect the black oil seeds for sunflower oil. So you think about it, for those that are buying that seed and they're planting it in their soil, you know, you're the class one poison toxin. We've got to stop eating food that's full of toxins, that's full of these chemicals. So I know, we don't know it. We don't know that we shouldn't be eating it, but a guarantee that you're going to get there quicker as far as maintaining your health is to eat certified organic, and especially in seeds.
Okay.
So sprouting, when that big alfalfa thing came along, it was for sprouting alfalfa sprouts. And the sprout is eating the seeds included, the root and the shoot. All of that is a sprout. So they were finding E. coli in the sprouts, but they weren't finding it. They didn't look into the organic seed. They wouldn't have found it then because there's standards and you don't spray raw manure on your seed crops, mm-hmm. which you do in conventional farming because they don't have any standards.
So
when I brought up, well, you need to use organic seeds.
So we start, totally we start with, our, yeah.
Not even address it. So that's where.
So we start with organic seeds, right?
You start with organic seeds.
Good.
Yes. And yeah, that's where it all comes about.
And so there are all kinds of seeds to sprout. How do you decide which one?
Oh, well, we trial them. And so in our greenhouses, let me just continue. So microgreens, the difference is that we harvest them. We leave the seed in the soil, although we don't need to because we use certified organic seeds. It's fine. But we harvest, and then we changed the name to microgreens so that we could get out of the whole sprout category, which was being really hammered. It was really being hammered. The industry at that time it reduced down from like 500 sprouters to maybe 10.
Woo! So
and
that was
we were one of the survivors because we renamed it and we changed our growing method, so we no longer were growing sprouts.
That's very interesting. Okay. So it was a time when sprouts were having a big problem with contamination. People were getting sick from eating sprouts, not necessarily organic sprouts, but sprouts.
Yeah.
And so, of course, when something like that happens, Ken, the government comes in, right, and starts protecting everybody. And so you guys had to make a significant change to survive that.
We did. Well, in order to survive, there was a time when there were a few things, very important things going on, all simultaneously. One, organic was going federal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a threat to the whole agricultural community, if you want to call it, to ag, commercial ag. That was threatening. So when they called in alfalfa sprouts, I maintain, because you can pose a problem with, like, for instance, alfalfa sprouts, and you don't even have to use the term organic because it's just associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
In our minds, hippies, hippies, alternative, that's what sprouts are, right? So that's how that was used. And then the other thing was that the information came out with broccoli, the research, so they were trying to get that going and patent it. So all these things were happening together, all together. So it was a very interesting time.
Yeah, so you suggest that all of these things that were happening were essentially a threat to industrial food products.
Absolutely.
And industrial agriculture. Yes.
And
you were hippies at the time, were you not? And here you were sprouting seeds and industrial agriculture looked at you and thought, these people are a threat, because if people eat this food, they're not going to be so happy eating our food, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, it was really something. Yeah, and so we were, in the process of that whole thing, we were really being threatened. Verbally, personally, everything. We were being threatened during that time. It was really interesting.
Now, Ken, when was that? Okay, wait a minute. Let me back up a little bit, because you two were among the pioneers of organic agriculture in the United States of America. I think you were.
Well,
I think you were. Ken, you were number 11. Were you not?
Yeah, we were the 11th farm in California certified organic by California Certified Organic Farmers. And so we were just getting started. There was just a small group of us that had a feeling that we needed to be organic and decide what organic meant as opposed to conventional farming. And so, yeah, we were early on with that. It was pretty, we got the job done. We kept an eye on each other. And then eventually it turned into a state law. And then eventually it turned into a federal law. And now it's the whole organic program and the seal and so forth are administered from Washington, D.C. through private certifiers such as CCOF. So
now
we've seen the whole arc of the organic from the beginning, basically.
Sandra suggests that you found yourself threatened or belittled or shunned or otherwise put down during this the formative times of organic.
Yeah. Well, Michael, the FDA got onto this, and a few careers were made by individuals in charging up this issue, so to speak. And they really didn't take the time to look deeply into this and understand what the actual problem was. But they did determine real shortly that it was the seed. It wasn't the sprouters, it was the seed. And the seed was being introduced into the sprouting operation with the contamination on it. And the FDA will say exactly the same thing. But the FDA doesn't regulate seed. So what they did was they went around and regulated sprouters right out of business. Now, the reason conventional seed was having issues is because alfalfa seed in particular, they use it, they use an alfalfa field to cut and graze cattle. So they'll graze cattle through an alfalfa field, and then they'll take them off late in the season. It'll go to seed, they'll harvest seed, and they'll sell it to sprouters. Well, the cows have pooped all over that field, and they haul the seed in poop-contaminated trailers and so forth. And this is all on the conventional side. On the organic side, you wouldn't be able to do that. You can't apply raw manure to a field on the organic side anytime close to harvest, so it wouldn't be a problem. But in the conventional side, you can do those kinds of practices. And like Sandra mentioned earlier, you can use paraquat and a whole bunch of other things. So that's why we decided early on to use only organic seed. We've only ever used organic seed, and we've never broken that. It costs us quite a bit more to operate using organic seed, but that's what we do. And unfortunately, it's not across the board that the certifying organizations recognize the need for organic seed in an organic sprouting or microgreen operation. But generally speaking, they do. But we've been pioneers in that, and that's a philosophical point or a practical point that we've stuck with since the beginning.
So insignificant, because if you start with dirty seeds, chances are you're going to get a dirty product because you're so close to seeds here. This is so you had to really change your whole world and the way you did things to survive this onslaught.
Yeah. And, you know, it worked out like everything. There's parts that work out for the better, you know, like everything. So it was great. I mean, it worked out for us, you know. It was we grow different products. I think they're better. They're, you know, each one is individual. They have their own flavors. They hang out. You know, it's good. It's like baby lettuce, you know. So,
So we've survived the onslaught with a product that people are still looking at it going, what is this? And hippies eat it, so it can't be that good, right? Why would I want to eat anything hippies eat, especially those in California? But, you know, when you look at the sprout or the microgreen, what you're getting is something that's ultimately fresh life and packed with all 40% more nutrition in the sprouts than in the grown plant.
At least. I mean, when you sprout wheat, the vitamin C multiplies by 300 times. So at least.
It's almost explosive in its nutrition.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And so some of the benefits that have been tracked so far, lowers blood pressure. Broccoli sprouts have been shown to reduce the risk of cancer. Big deal. One of the lowers cholesterol, which to people is, some people is very important. But one of the things that really strikes me, and something that I've been really coming to into awareness of, is the importance of gut health and the microbiome that live in and on us, and how important it is for us to tend to our herd as it is, especially those that live in the gut, because they control so much of our lives and our mental processes even. So having... Yeah. Fresh vegetation. That's what they live on. They don't live on cheeseburgers. They live on vegetation, those microbiome in our lower intestine. And what sprouts are is the perfect food for them, all trillion of them.
Right. Yeah. And we get into trouble because basically the SAD diet, which is the American diet, we cook everything. We cook everything. So all of the enzymes are always killed. We're not giving our systems anything that's rich and full of life because we cook everything. So this is a four. You're kind of like pushing the envelope here, and people have to eat this raw. So they're getting something. I mean, you know, if they just ate a little bit of our microgreens a day, they'd get all of their vitamins, everything they need. So this is kind of what we're trying to change.
Yeah, and Michael, you add into that the fact that the sugars in everything, there's sugar everywhere. People consume unbelievable amounts of sugar. And sugar is such a fast-burning, short-chain carbon kind of thing. It gets into the microbiome, and it just really changes the microbiome because your microbiome will adapt to what you're eating, and not necessarily in a good way because it wants to digest whatever shows up.
So with that, we're going to
really heats up your digestion process and makes it go really fast and to your detriment.
There it is.
You know, that's where you get a whole lot of diabetes.
Hold that thought. We're going to come right back. More of What's Eating What on the Food Chain. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yeah, so little time to talk about such an important thing as food that has life left in it. Bursting with food, brimming with food, nothing but food. It's almost, can you get it any purer than a microgreen? Ken? Maybe mother's milk? Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, here, sorry. Yeah, mother's milk is great. And in mother's milk, you also build your immune system because your mother, hopefully, has a good immune system and is passing all that on to you along with your microbiome, your initial microbiome. So the whole thing's a continuous process. You know, there's research done that says that families have a microbiome of their own. Microbiomes are a really big deal, and feeding it is really crucial, and feeding it correctly is real crucial. There's probably a lot of the craziness that's going on right now has to do with people's microbiomes. It's a really turning out to be a really big deal. So you want to feed it the food that's dense in nutrition, digest slowly, and digest in a good way and doesn't overheat you.
And so you too have been preaching the gospel of sprouts and microgreens for 42 years. Why haven't you convinced everybody that they should be eating microgreens?
Okay, because we're farmers and it takes a lot of time to do what we're doing, and we're not great marketers because that's a totally different kind of work. And so we have not done a lot of marketing, actually, and so we've just been working. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more marketing that we could do. There's more education. One thing, a microgreen is not a microgreen across the board. It depends on how it's grown, what elements are used, because it varies. And the bottom line is, you can taste it. And you can see it. And thank goodness our food has a lot of flavor and a lot of durability. But if somebody went somewhere else and tasted microgreens, which I've heard, they go, yuck, that's not very good. Why would I eat that? So
the interesting thing I hear in what you say is that what you do is really not you're not able to industrialize it.
Well, it's tough because industrial agriculture, especially what they call indoor agriculture or protected agriculture, they're also calling them vertical farms and all that sort of thing. What they try to do is control the environment precisely and perfectly. And that's not nature, and that's not what plants respond to well. Plants get healthy through a little bit of a challenge, through going through the daily cycle, sun up, sun down, nighttime. Plants build sugars early in the morning, like a corn plant or something. They build the sugars up through the night and early in the morning in order to use those sugars to produce chlorophyll through the day. and they deplete that through the day. So the natural daily cycle of plants is important. And if you've got them in a vertical farm, you're basically running an industrial chicken house where you've got the chickens laying eggs 24/7 because you've got the lights on all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't use artificial lights on purpose because you don't get good, strong, healthy plants from artificial light. You can't replicate sunlight. It can't be done. There is no artificial light that has the same broad spectrum of light in the intensity that sunlight has. So we only use sunlight to grow our plants. We let the temperatures go up and down, and we introduce a whole lot of fresh air into the situation. So we grow them in a really natural way. They end up stronger, and I feel like they've probably got a whole lot more nutrition to them as a result.
You know, for those who have not seen a vertical food production system, I had the opportunity a number of years ago when I gave a speech in Milwaukee, and I was given a tour of a vertical farm, a warehouse, you know, an industrial warehouse in industrial Milwaukee. And the array of trays were stacked up to the ceiling, and they had artificial lights. And I thought, you know, this is interesting. You could feed a city with that. But then I thought, I don't think you can feed a city well with that kind of agriculture, because I think, and I've always thought, that when you take all of that responsibility of doing what nature does, you become the god. And I don't think anybody's that smart. And so I think you can grow food in that kind of environment, but I don't think you can grow food well. Now, I might be wrong, and I've been waiting for somebody to prove me wrong for many years, but I don't think I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. You're right. And it turns out a lot of those vertical farms are simply investment vehicles, and they show off a lot of high tech. They bring in millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to expand, and then they just keep bringing in investors to pay off the early investors. And there's any number of them that are going bankrupt right now because the investors are shying away at this point. They're not long-term return because it was kind of a Ponzi scheme. It was a capital-intensive build. It takes a lot of energy, and their carbon footprint is not as good as a farm, because they're using so much electricity to run the lights, to cool the building off, and all that sort of thing. And the food is not really great. You can't really feed people on that.
You can, but you can't feed them well.
Yeah, that's the point.
I don't think you can feed them well. You cannot get that essential nutrition that you have, which leads me to wonder, maybe that's the problem, is that there's not enough of you out there.
We could change that, you know. We could get we could franchise ourselves and get this stuff growing in Alabama and Georgia and, you know, Maine. We could do that. We could show people how to get their own little farm going, which is, it would be great for them. It's an incredibly nurturing activity to grow your own food. Well, it really is. So,
In that regard, you know, some time ago, we were talking about marketing, now kind of shifting into the concept of marketing, because what you have is very, very special, but who the heck knows it? So some years ago, I had a fellow call me up from the deep south, and he said, Michael, I grow the best watermelons in the south, Michael. Everybody says so, but I'm not making any money, Michael. What's wrong with me? I said, well, where are you selling the watermelons? And he said, well, a guy comes by every couple of weeks, and I just load him up on his truck, and he takes him into town. And I said, well, why are you bothering growing the best watermelons in the south if you're selling them in the same truckload of everybody else's? So you're growing the most expensive food and selling it with the cheapest food. It doesn't make any sense. So to really make those watermelons work, you have to find some way of differentiating the product. This is not them. Mm-hmm. This is us. And we all have to do that when we're, I guess, in metropolitan agriculture. You do that. You two do that, I know, because I see you in action all the time at the farmer's market. So you do the differentiating one-on-one, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So how on earth can
we brand our product on the shelf so people know what it is? And we are certified organic, and we believe in that. We've been certified forever. So we
wait a minute. Now, that's a real big deal for a lot of people, being certified organic. Because mm-hmm. my wife, for one, or maybe she's been listening to me too long doing radio shows, but she won't buy anything that's not organic anymore. And
I
suspect
this.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I simply have it distilled down to saying, pay now or pay later.
Well,
what do you want? That's what I tell people. You know, it's not that we're expensive. I don't think we are. But it's when you're looking at cheap food, that's the choice you're making. You're going to save it now, but you're going to pay for it later. You're going to pay for it. So that's what I tell people.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, it seems like another issue that we have here with respect to getting everybody to eat sprouts is the availability. Because I don't see them in supermarkets, per se, or at Costco or anything like that. So
yeah, not anymore.
Yeah. Mm-mm. You know, Michael, it's perishability is part of the issue. And the large chains move produce from all over the place, including, you know, foreign countries and so forth, Mexico and all that.
Sprouts from China.
They need a product that doesn't perish. And in that case, then a lot of these products, strawberries and so forth, are bred for shelf life. And so they move, they can move them and they can hold them. So you find a large chain grocery store, that produce might be 2 or 3 weeks old by the time you pick it up in the shelf, off the shelf in the supermarket. That's not really going to work for the fresh greens that we grow. So yeah, there is that side of the issue to it. So people need to shop at farmers markets. They need to shop at Whole Foods or natural food stores that are close to home and they're buying from local growers. Keep your food chain as short as you possibly can and get yourself some really good food is really a great way to operate in terms of feeding yourself.
So a lot of
we learned that from we learned that from COVID, that, you know, the deliveries were starting to shut down. We were losing our local food, not us per se, because we have so many local farmers here, but it was a very strong threat whenever COVID was going on and things were breaking down. What are we going to eat?
Cans of beans. You know?
Cans of beans, yeah.
Cans of beans, yeah.
Flying off the shelves.
You know, what you say puts a lot of the responsibility on this, our food, on eaters like me.
Right.
So I have to assume the responsibility of thinking about the food that I eat. That's kind of frightening, because sprouts and microgreens require one to be an astute shopper. And it's so easy not to be an astute shopper in today's food world, where there's a convenience store on every corner and not a thing to eat in them when it's worth eating, when it gets right down. So that means that I have to somehow, all consumers have to somehow take it upon themselves to find some food with its farmer's face on it.
Yeah. Michael, and you think, okay, food is medicine. So think if the doctor prescribe to you some kind of food, say alfalfa sprouts, rather than a medicine, you know, the doctor would be in trouble for malpractice because he wouldn't be prescribing, or she wouldn't be prescribing some kind of a patent medicine. There's real serious money at stake here in keeping people on pharmaceuticals and keeping them, you know, keeping doctors in line with that sort of thing. There are a few doctors that have branched out and are recommending huge diet changes or diet changes for people because of the really huge impact it has on people's health. And they're few and far between. Most doctors operate just like we do. You know, you sign this piece of paper, everything's good. Nobody's going to question what you said because it's standard practice. But just think, food is medicine, and what if doctors were prescribing good food as your medicine? I have to say that Kaiser, a large health organization here in California, is actually starting to sponsor markets and purchases at farmers markets, and they're giving out prescriptions for diets, and they're prescribing to people vegetables and so forth, and they will actually help you buy the good food, because they have the information that says that good food keeps you out of the hospital, and they don't want to pay for you to be in the hospital if they can help it.
Yeah, but let me just say that it's not this prescription, this new prescription program is not just Kaiser. It's any health practitioner can now give these prescriptions for food. And right now it's directed at the farmer's market. So this is a beautiful start. You know, 40 years later, whenever, I don't care. At least it's beginning. At least it's starting here. You
know? 40 years and finally somebody's paying attention. Well, we've been paying attention for a long time to you too, and for the wonderful foods that you eat, that you produce and provide for the public. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we've been talking with Ken Kimes and Sarah Ward from New Natives. Why New Natives? Well, they're taking something very, 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 very old and bringing it to our attention, thereby making it something new. Sprouts.
Yes.
Not just from hippies either, but from real farmers growing real food with its farmer's face on it. Thank you both for joining in and appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. It's always a treat.
It's been fun.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.